Hi there, and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years, and I'm fascinated by how the companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them, and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds, and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado, to today's episode. With St. Patrick's Day just around the corner, it's very fitting to be talking about a company so synonymous with the celebrations on both sides of the Atlantic. There can't be too many people, certainly in Dublin, who haven't heard of Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel in Killiney. And while the building itself is a very long history dating back all the way to 1740, its current incarnation began in 1970 when Paddy and Etna Fitzpatrick fulfilled a lifetime ambition by buying Killiney Castle and its grounds. They initially opened one room at a time, eventually reaching 13 rooms in the original castle before embarking on a massive expansion plan over the 1975 to 1995 period that saw the property grow by 100 rooms, a fitness centre and conference and meeting spaces. The group then expanded to open hotels in Bunratty, New York and Chicago before splitting into separate ownership when Paddy died. The Fitzpatrick Castle Hotel has been in the ownership of Paddy and Etna's daughter since 2005 and has been operating for over 50 years. Sitting in front of me are Mark and Joseph Scott Lennon, the current generation of operators. Mark has over 20 years of hospitality experience and took over running Fitzpatrick's Castle in 2012. His international experience working in Vancouver and New York and is heavily involved in the Irish Hotel Federation as a current member of the National Council. Joseph has 14 years hospitality experience packed with international destinations like St. Vincent, the Grenadines, New York and Dubai. He's been hotel manager at Fitzpatrick Castle for the last 2 years. Gents, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks,
and I hope I got everything in here, right? So we kick it off, and I'm going to kick it off with a nice easy one, right? As part of this preparation, I actually listened last night to an interview with Christopher Nassetta, who is the CEO of the Hilton Hotel Group, and he's been there since 2007. And the fellow who interviewed him, the first question off the bat from him was the one I'm going to ask you now. Okay, and here we go. What makes a good hotel?
Definitely a good welcome. I'd say, like, the Irish are famous for welcomes, and particularly as an Irish enterprise, value of a good welcome and personal recognition is far outweighs any skill that you can teach anybody. So I'd say the basis of that, and maybe people who walk floors, managers who attend to details. But above all else, like, the personal element and the welcome is probably what I would say.
Yeah, I think I second that to the people. Like, you can have, you know, the swankiest hotel or in product and rooms, and but it's all about the people and how they look after people and how they show empathy to the all manner of guests that come for different reasons. So it's something we focus on very heavily in our training, is just drumming home, you're here to look after people, and this is how we care for people. And what we really try to stand out on is that personalised attention to detail and care for our guests.
Well, for the record, he said location, product, but above all else, the people and the service. There you go. You weren't far off.
We're running Hilton next.
Well, he's been knocking around there a long time. Was it always going to be a career in hospitality for the two of you?
For me personally, I initially thought yes, and, you know, I was in a way nearly disappointed when my aptitude tests in school came back saying that I was that I should be in hospitality. And I think when we all worked it's very hard to understand if you loved the four walls of the building that we grew up around, or whether you loved actually doing what it entailed. And I suppose it took me going away to realise at that point that I really did love what I did, regardless if it was for a chain or a brand or corporate hotels that I should have hated, or and just understanding that you do enjoy the everyday and that you take validation and enjoyment from it. So yes, I'd say, even if I thought otherwise, yes, it probably was.
You just didn't realise.
It wasn't always for me as such, as in I never made an early decision to do it. I've worked since we were kind of 16 in the hotel, and always loved the work, but didn't really commit to it. When I was leaving school, wanted to keep my options open You know, was nervous about the pitfalls of just going into the family business and then regretting it. So took my time, but always worked in hospitality, even when abroad on J1s and holidays. And yeah, Joseph would be able to attest to it more, but got great validation from working in other places, because it can be difficult working in a family business. My periods abroad were a lot briefer, it made me really realise that I do love the day-to-day and meeting the various people and what the work entails. So it became apparent I wasn't going to do anything else. Yeah.
Really. Did you ever come close or give really strong thought to doing something completely different?
No.
Was there ever anything else?
You didn't want to be a surgeon or anything like that? No.
I don't think... we have a brother. Our eldest brother is a management consultant, and I suppose
that would put anybody off.
I know. But I think when we were, I was maybe like 22, 23, and I knew I wanted to live in New York, and I was very stressed about being a young manager in the hotel and probably didn't understand if I was any good at it. And I remember I spoke to Mark and said, we had a big heart-to-heart in the function room upstairs, and said, like, I want to go to New York and I want to just be free of like working in the hotel. I want a complete break to figure out if it's what I want to do. And Mark, to be fair to him, said the place never fell down. I felt very guilty, but he said the place never fell down without any of us. And go to New York, fulfill your dream. But he said, please work in hotels, because I believe you'll enjoy it and you're good at it. And he was probably right. So even when my eye drifted, I think nothing ever could have actually compared to what we do now.
And working as a duo, right? And I've talked to a lot of people who are in this, be it husband, wives, brothers, sisters, you know, that type of thing. Where does the business end and the personal life begin? Or, you know, is it business all the time?
Yeah, it can be a difficult one. It's like kind of like a second marriage for me. Joe's not married. And like, you do have to look after it in that way and make sure that you do have personal time, that you aren't talking about business. And, you know, we're lucky we get on super well. So, you know, when we are in work, you know, we could be talking about rugby or something else at a time.
It could be in a rugby match talking about work.
So, but no, it definitely takes work, and it definitely puts strain on the personal relationship, and you have to remember and make time for that.
And is it when you go around to mum's on a Sunday dinner, is it off the table and we're not talking about business?
I think everybody says, oh geez, we don't bring business to a dinner table. Like, it's a complete lie. Anybody who says that, I'd say it's complete fraud. It is natural, like, and I think you have to probably know when to draw the line, like when things get heated at a Sunday dinner, for example. But like, the reality is, we're all in it. We're like, our father's a publican, our mum's a hotelier, our brothers all worked in hospitality at different points. Like, everybody does have an opinion. Never mind when we Christmas dinner with three of our uncles who are all involved in the hotel. So like, it is natural, and it's if it was ever to get nasty or too personal, that's like when we draw the line. But healthy debate is present.
Ever-present debate.
Chris, the other side of it too, and I talked to a lot of family businesses in this, and we've had a good few on the podcast, is the whole issue of intergenerational business conflict. And the new generation comes in and has ideas, and the old generation go, not while I'm still here.
I know, like, I worked longer with mum because Joseph would have been away, and she was like pretty incredible, particularly for me when I started out managing a little bit young. I was probably 25 when I took on the general manager role, and she kind of did let me make some mistakes that she probably knew were mistakes when I was insisting on doing it, and gave me space to do it. So she wasn't too bad. Had her disagreements, but never too dramatic.
She probably had her fair share of "I told you so" different things. But like, to echo that, like, she's always such a lean on for us, like, in that sense, that she's always actually been super supportive, and she'll query things, like, of course, you know, as was always her right and is her right, regardless who owns the castle. I think when she does, you know, it's sort of,
it's not for the sake of it.
Yes, it's for the best of the business. And like, she's always been super supportive. Like, we recently put in paddle courts. Initially was like, what is this thing? You know, like, you know, thought we were putting in some sort of like wrestling cage in the top car park. But ultimately, sort of worked out that she's 2 months down the line being like, geez, well done, lads, that was amazing. But she never put a block to it, you know. So yes, she expresses concerns, but like she always has like certainly let us cut her own path.
And was she happy passing that control? Like, you know, because obviously, as you said, she worked with you, but then she kind of took the stabilizers off the bike, if you will, and let you go.
Well, it's a little bit of like, you just think she probably gradually, there's no grand moment, but it's definitely encouragement from my side as well in her feeling less need to be there all the time in the castle and to give her the freedom to say, look, I'm here, don't worry about it, you know. So it was kind of from both sides that it kind of gradually moved to that kind of point. But generally on the two topics, like working together and working with family, like the positives massively outweigh the negatives. You know, it's such amazing resource. People don't, if they're not working in a family business, they wouldn't get it. But when you get to work with someone, you can speak really plainly to about what your concerns, your insecurities, your worries are about the business, without worrying about, you know, HR and law and and professional language. You know, that can have its downside of being too familiar, too heated, too...
Yeah, but you're also talking to somebody who has a huge innate knowledge of the business as well. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so it's not like an outsider that doesn't know the individual foibles of the business because, you know...
Well, it's funny, like, one thing that sprung to mind there when I was talking about it is, like, it can be challenging day to day, but, you know, Joseph goes away on a two-week holiday and I really miss him being in the castle on those days. My days in work aren't the same. I don't have the same support. I don't have the same go-to when something comes into my head. So, like, you know, when you feel that missing someone for 2 weeks and they're off on holidays, I'm sure he might miss me when I'm gone. But personally speaking, I certainly miss him when he's gone. So I think that's testament to how much I enjoy working with him.
It's funny, we had Rosie Temple from McGee Menswear on the podcast, and she's fifth generation of the business, right? So
name on that one. But,
and I asked her the same thing about, you know, when you've got a business and you know, Fitzpatrick Castle is that, given the heritage of the business, putting your own personal stamp on it. Like, she would have been of the view, she said, look, I'm not the CEO of this business. I'm just the custodian for this generation to pass it to the next.
Yeah, like, you know? I think we have to consider it like that. And, you know, we always have. And, like, we're still referencing our granddad in meetings. You know, like, my granddad died when I was about 9, so I didn't have a whole lot of interactions. But I've always considered him like a, you know, an idol and something you'd aspire to be. And, like, those conversations still happen because... Mum's around and Mark's around, and like I would always consider that line has to be core to everything. Like, that line of, this is like our central business, is people, is family, is from our family to yours as a service style. And like, that means a lot. And then you can add the bits on and you know, upgrade the pool and do paddle courts or whatever, but the heart of the business is the same, and that's the...
Have the continuity of the essence of the business as opposed to the assets of the business necessarily.
That's the big thing for us.
And we do, like, definitely appreciate that we have the responsibility to look after the business, and we have the... you know, the chance to do what we're doing because of all the hard work and the chances and the risk our granddad took. So, like, that's always front of mind. That, like, he worked bloody hard and did an amazing job building up a big business that we're lucky enough to be able to work in and take on.
And I think, like, that when you talk about it as well, like, you know, it's sometimes, for want of a better word, like, it's sometimes easy to talk about the fluff and the essence or, like, this idea. But, like, you know, although we're custodians of that, like, we're also custodians of a P&L and, like, trying to so we have to
balance the books.
Yeah, exactly. You have to strike the balance between we're providing a service, so we have to be providing a service that people want. So just because they did a thing a certain way 10 years ago, or a huge line share of our business was conference business and now mightn't be, you know, like, that's probably not an accurate example, but you know, we have to find ways to shift and pivot while showing tradition and respect, you know. So it's you have to position yourself in different ways, I suppose. It's different hats.
We obviously mentioned in the intro that the group used to include the New York and Chicago and Bernardi hotels. It's now Chicago and Bernardi aren't there, but in terms of the ongoing relationship with guys in New York, you know, how does that work?
That's our Uncle John. So both of us, he'd be, you know, another mentor along with our mother. that we would have a good close relationship with, and he has a lot of business in Ireland, so he's home quite regularly as well. So you know, it's a source of pride as well that they're there, and you know.
And then work-wise, like, I think it's still treated as a sister hotel. Like, we still, like, they have a great management team over there with, like Shane Tufford, the GM over there. And, like, we'd always be in communication and, like, do a couple of holiday shows together a year. Like, we'd share a stand and, like, cross-sell between. So if they have a client, for example, that's a regular client of theirs that's coming to Ireland, they'll be like, oh, you know, we have Mr. X or Y coming over. Is there any chance you'd sort them out the rate, or they want to do this, help them organise that in town? Like, and we'd always do that. And, like, that sort of is still there. And obviously, as Mark said, like, John's big mentor to us. I have a very close relationship, even from living in New York and having breakfast every Saturday and chatting about work. And but I think like it's still there, but it's, you know, separate ownership. But as I said, it's still the same family. Like, John still wants the castle to do well. We still feel as representatives of New York in the same way. You know, so
it's incredible though when you think about it. Like, I was talking to a few people before that, and people still automatically assume it's all same, all part of the same group. And like, it's quite incredible when you think about it. You know, and you say to some, like I was saying to somebody, oh, I'm interviewing the lads from Fitzpatrick's Hotel. Oh, the ones in New York, and then the others will be, oh, the lovely one in Killiney, and it's people's frame of mind.
Well, people say it, like, in the castle, we go, oh, like, and you've got two hotels in New York, and sometimes they say yes.
It's a family,
God, yeah, of course we do. Manhattan,
Obviously, the industry has gone through a massive change over the last few years, the whole hotel industry. Do you still think there is a place for a small operator?
I think there'll always be a place for a small operator. I think it's, when you talk about a personal business, like, it is a personal business, and I think it's so important. Well, for Ireland as a representative, like, you know, I think our granddad's vision, he always used to say you could go to the corner of any street in America and find an Irish pub, but you can't find an Irish hotel. So it's the same extension of hospitality. Irish people do it well. I think that there is always a place for it, because people hopefully get a service there that they don't get elsewhere and don't get in brands or cookie cutter form of businesses, you know. And although it mightn't be the market leader, you know, and that's a reality as well, you know, that there's a certain cap to what you can do. I think there's always a place for it, particularly in communities like, you know, Killiney and Dalkey.
There's also, like, I was actually listening to the podcast you mentioned with the lady from McGee. Similar thing, people like to support local, they like to support, they like to know where their money's going. And, you know, I think there's a massive place for a family run operated hotel where you can look and see who's running it, and you know they're going to look after you, and they're not a big corporation that's very you know,
generic. And ultimately, I think that's where, you know, when you look at the big hotels, you know, service is obviously a big thing in every hotel, but it's almost like they have the manual and everybody goes to the manual, whereas you go to your, it becomes a much more personal. So it's the level of service is the same, but one is kind of personalised and one is out of a corporate manual, if you know what I mean.
And it translates, you know, it does translate with people in terms of, like, they want to know that they can walk in and know the people in it and not think that they're just a number or something, you know. Like, I worked in a couple of chains, and I was pleasantly surprised how personalised a lot of it was, to be honest, because sometimes you want to glorify it as well. But I think, yeah, it's like people expect to get their coffee hot and on time, you know, but they don't expect you to remember their order, and they don't expect you to remember their name, you know. And I would like to think that sort of level of basic detail happens a lot more in a family business than it would happen in a chain, perhaps.
Kind of switching tack slightly, but along the same line, is that obviously culture is so important in the services industry, the culture in the business. What do you think is the difference between establishing a culture in an organic fashion, if you were to set up your own hotel, and then the kind of the culture that you've inherited and try to develop, you know, with a third generation business?
It's I'd say we probably have a leg up as the way I look at it. Right. You know, like we're able to, like we're very lucky to have a lot of long-serving staff members. We, our head chef retired during COVID. He's with us 50 years and he's great pals with our granddad. And we've our senior executive manager looks after guest relations is with us 45 years and our sales director 20 years. And like that kind of thread of them knowing what the culture is and how we look after guests is always kind of there. And then we get our opportunity to bring our point of view to it or our twist to it. It's not like starting afresh. There's already I feel certainly we're lucky that there's a serious people first culture in the hotel that was set up by my granddad and has stayed with the long serving staff, and we get to adapt to that and tweak it rather than have to, you know, do that from scratch.
What do you feel about what you've already done with the hotel and the business
I think you, in most of those things, you're sort of destined to be undersatisfied. And like you probably wouldn't be ambitious enough if you weren't. So like I think we overlook a lot of the positive things. I think we've loads of work to do. We've loads of work to do, and particularly to get to our like future goals. I think there's plenty of work to do, but there always is, and it's like trying to make incremental change to be proud of the everyday rather than like the big picture, you know, and like trying to have an overarching plan that's always in place, but looking after that, like the everyday thing that keeps that bigger plan ticking over. Like for me, that's big, you know. Like I use the example to our team, like in operations, about like your daily briefing. If your daily briefing happens every day, like your staff are already tuned in, they go onto the floor knowing, or you know, they're onto the floor knowing exactly who's in house, what's happening in the hotel. They feel listened to because you're talking about feedback. That's like 10 minutes to every day that sets your whole business on track, as opposed to a mammoth training day where you bring in all staff into a function room and teach them how to silver serve, you know? So it's like, for me, I think it's those things that you can be proud of if you can instill things that are self-fulfilling.
I suppose the big question then is, what's your approach to change when you look at the business?
I'd say mine's changed since coming back.
Would you?
Yeah. When I came back, I thought that I'd come in emboldened in a belief and just, you know, show everybody the light and all that stuff. But I've realised much more that you have to involve people in change. Like, I can hand somebody an alien, a manual, and say, this is how you run the lobby, you know. But if you don't ask the person who's in that lobby for 7 hours a day what makes their life difficult or what they don't understand or what their knowledge gaps are, and then like work that into processes, like I think that is the way forward for change, because then they see themselves in the document, for example in an SOP, you know, like they see themselves in that and thus are more likely to profess it. Like I think that's probably, that would be my adapted version of change. And then customer focus in terms of the, like the business seeing trends, like and being willing to pivot, like being willing to pivot if something's not working. Like give things the correct attention, but like if they're not working in their current format, be willing and open to change things the way that they lie as they are.
Anything?
Starting out managing the business, like definitely realize like change is the only thing that's constant. Yeah. You know, so you know, it would have been a challenge when I can't, even though we've great long serving staff, there's also then a way of doing it is pretty slower to change, as Joseph said, involving people, and you know, it might take a little bit longer to make the change you'd like to. And then sometimes you mightn't make the change that you think is a change if you give it that time as well. So, but consulting people and make sure they feel involved, but certainly not afraid of change in any way.
And like perfection should never get in the way of progress in that sense, like where it's like, you know, it's things just need to keep moving forward, whether it's wrong or right, you'll find out pretty quick. But if you accept it, if you accept it for the way it is, like you have very little chance of any change or effective change.
Yeah. To what extent has fear of failure been a driving force for you?
Pretty big early on. I suppose, again, when I started as general manager, why I started so young was kind of circumstance as well, that I'd finished up my degree and we were going through a very rocky financial period where we had a couple of months to save the business when our bank were leaving the country. So, you know, there was certainly a massive fear of failure there that was driving us in a couple of years where we had to manage the business really, really lean to get back to pillar banking and set it on the right path. So it was definitely a big motivator then. And then I suppose every day on a smaller thing, and we keep reference to our granddad, but we do feel a great weight of responsibility of the great name the hotel has. And, you know, we do feel that every day. When I'd imagine we get hurt a little bit more by guest feedback than most business people, because it just, you do feel like you're letting down not just you today, but what the business stands for. So fear of failure is definitely has had a role and will continue to have a role.
Yeah, I'd say the same. I think fear of failure is like a good motivator, I suppose. You know, I think it's ever present. It was ever present for me, particularly as well in going away and all that. Like, you didn't want to like go and
coming back
actually wasn't that great at this. Yeah. Like, you know, so I think it is that, and the fear of failure, particularly in a family business, is like, as Mark touched on there, like really hurtful. Like, you know, and you feel like you own every mistake, and it's it keeps you on edge, and on edge keeps you good most of the time and keeps you on the ball. And the day that you feel very happy and contented with everything is probably the day that something's going to go wrong, you know. So I think fear of failure is sort of necessary as long as it's not overawing, you know.
I had a boss, one of my first bosses in Davies used to say, he says, you have to always remember that there's only 4 inches between a clap in the back and a kick in the rear, you know.
I love that.
So we do all get along on that thing. But again, with the whole level of service, and how we've talked about service being really, really important, do you obsess about the small things?
Yeah. Well, I definitely would. And it's like a weird sort of zoom in, zoom out scenario where you should be far enough away from the details to be able to look at them, i.e. if a function room's being set, you shouldn't be setting the function room, but you should be coming in picking up the things that are wrong. And then if you are the one setting the function room because you're not showing enough trust and looking at those details, sometimes you miss them. So it's like, I think it's like one of those big things that you should be detail orientated, but in short bursts, as opposed to like you should be really macro level on most things and process that leads you, and then be like picking at the, you know. I think I used to go for a luncheon. There was a luncheon with the general manager in the hotel I worked in Dubai in the Intercontinental, and it was a complex, so there was several, like, yeah, I think there was 30, 40 food and beverage managers across the 5 hotels, and he would pick like 5 that you'd go for lunch with, and he had, you know, you'd ask him a question. I said, like, what's the most important thing for a general manager for you in your position on your day to day that you think allows you to succeed? And he said, I change the rubber on my shoes every month because I walk so much. And he's like, I walk enough that everybody knows that I'm in every corner of this building and that I will see every detail eventually. But and so he used to say, you know, and the day he left, it was New Year's Eve, and we'd done it, and I asked if I could walk with him on his walk to from my bar and restaurant to another one, and he said, look, best luck in your career, and don't forget, keep buying rubber. And yeah, I always loved that, because in my head it was like an accountability thing, that if you're always in around it and people are seeing you, like people knew he was walking into the buffet at 10 a.m. every day, you know, and they'd know that it was going to be in line, and you know, it was not that it should have just been in line at 10 a.m. But the logic was that they knew that he was ever present and that he'd be looking. So I'd aspire to have that level of I suppose touch points, you know.
I think it's a hard constant battle in the line of work we're in, because it is such a people business, and it is such an operational business, and how you learn and grow up in the hotel is by doing the small details and by doing the function. So it's actually, you need to, I try to do, to worry about it less, because it's the natural instinct to worry about the day-to-day and the smaller things, and you do need to pull yourself out and try to work on the larger things in the business. But it's a constant battle, because that's how you started, and you know, that's how it got you, that's what got you to the dance and such.
Yeah, yeah. So is preparation very important then?
Oh yeah, hugely important. Yeah. If you're behind, particularly in a hotel context, you're in trouble. It's kind of hard to recover. So it's hugely about planning and getting ahead.
Customers are great at telling you what's wrong with the product, but not necessarily great at telling you what the solution is, right? So how do you overcome this?
Yeah. I suppose, like, loads of feedback. You know, you talked about how change happens. It's something similar. Like, we roundtable stuff. We have feedback meetings where we sit down and go through all the meetings. Like, we just finished a festive review of that period of time and, like, what has come in. And it's funny, because before the actual feedback got released, I asked everybody to fill out what they thought they'd done well, what they'd done poorly, and what they would do for the next 2 months to fix it, and what they would do next year for the same period. And like 90% of the problems were fixed before the feedback that they'd seen. Mm-hmm. You know, in their head, you know, they knew what was wrong. So it's like really sort of provoking thought for those for the feedback for the managers, and then like letting them have put processes in place that means that they can take over. Like, I think that's
probably the hardest part. I find, I know you definitely find, is the feedback, because of the personal element of it. Like, you know, if you scroll on TripAdvisor or a review, you'll read, this is the best hotel in the world and they should train everyone how to look after guests. Yeah. And the next one will be like, a motel you should never visit. And you're like, what the hell?
Oh yeah.
How are those two days so different?
Yeah. What I tried to tell people, and is kind of like, you have to look in the middle, because feedback is such an emotional thing, and people's experience is such an emotional thing. There's always like a truth in the middle about something you can fix and something you can learn. And you know, you're always saying it, you know, people can get offended and defensive because of the language used by someone in their feedback, but there's probably truth in some of it, and you kind of forget about the emotion and try to pick out the facts, how can we make this better, how can we use this, trying to layer it back a little bit.
I said that actually recently about somebody. There was an email that came in, and I was chatting to a manager, and I said, there was an excuse for something, and I said, look, you go back over the last 10 emails that have come in for feedback and tell me what came back as an action and tell me what came back as an excuse.
Yeah.
And then figure out yourself,
As you get bigger, is there a risk that the level of service falls? And if so, how do you get around that? And I would use it, I'd say that more from the general hotel industry rather than necessarily, you know, when you think about your career, is there a real risk that, you know, if you're running multiple places and things like that, that service just, there's always a difference in the places that you go to?
I'd say yes, that would be an implicit risk. I suppose how you mitigate it, good hiring, good recruitment of good people, not necessarily good positions. You know, particularly we're in hospitality, there's a relatively shallow pool at the minute of, you know, executive level candidates. It's a difficult place to hire. So like, if you're looking for an assistant conference and banqueting manager, you actually might be better off finding a good person that works in the lobby so you can move somebody to. So I think finding good people would mitigate against that risk, but like the risk is implicit. I suppose we'll find out more about that in the future when we expand, hopefully. Yeah. But that's definitely something I've thought of. Like, if you were to step away from this, how does it go? Now, it's never as bad as you think it's going to be. We all feel like we hold up the walls at the best of times, but you realise that there's good things in place often when you go away.
And on the staffing side, because there's a nice segue in. Hire talent or develop from within? Discuss.
We do a lot of developing from within, and a lot of our like core team members would have started out, like our sales director, as I mentioned earlier on, she's with us 20 years, started out part-time in banqueting. Our senior executive manager looks after guest relations, she's with us 45 years and started on the front desk. I don't know, my granddad always said about being a manager in the hotel, and you know, we both did a management trainee program in the hotel. We worked in every department for 3 or 4 months. So you can never manage someone if you haven't been in their shoes and you haven't done their job. So like, I'd be a big believer in that. If they've, you know, they'll show the right level of empathy, they'll know what it's like to be in the cold face. And you know, it can be a challenge to, like I said earlier, get people away from that, what got them to the dance, and get them to learn the management skills. But there's definitely a huge benefit to them being there for that length of time.
I think like it does have to be a blend. Like if it was a blend between four, I think you say like three promoted, one hired, because perspective is everything in driving products forward, you know. And if somebody's done something a better way somewhere else, for them to bring in expertise, or like, you know, we probably have like in food and beverage in my head, you know, we've got a senior manager hired, and then we've probably got like 3 or 4 internal promotions there, which is probably about that balance. And for me, that's probably right, because you have people who worked up, have gained the respect of their colleagues, who are in positions on merit, and then you have somebody who can come in and lead and coach those types of individuals.
Yeah, the risk always from developing within all the time is that you become very insular.
Yeah. Right?
And you're not open to the way other people do other things in that big world, you know. What advice would you give to young people today? Now, you're not particularly old, okay? I'm by far the senior sitting in this room. But you know, in terms of young people thinking about entering into the hospitality industry, what advice would you give them?
Do it. Like it's one of the most fulfilling careers that you can possibly have. Like, you get the opportunity. I don't know, today we probably have 450 customers at different times throughout the day, and you get the opportunity to genuinely impact, you know, maybe 100 of those people's day. There are very few careers in the world that you get to do that, and it's one of the things I always say in training is like the ability to give a little piece of yourself, whether it's a smile, whether it's a joke, whether it's a greeting, whether it's their name, a bit of time to listen, to impact somebody else's day. And it doesn't need, like, that that alone, like, you know, walking around the hotel on Christmas Day and serving Christmas lunch, you feel like you're a part of 20 families' Christmas. Like, it's the most amazing feeling. And I think there's, because of the lack of people going into it, and we've got such amazing colleges in the country between TUD and Shannon and a lot of the technical colleges and good courses, there's so much promotion in these companies for people who are coming in trained. Like, it's I am such an advocate of it, because I believe people who are outgoing or might struggle in different aspects of, like, not being the most academic or whatever. Like, I wasn't crazy academic, but it's I think it's a really undersold career for young people, and I could vouch for it from a personal sense of, I look forward to the rest of my life in hospitality, you know.
I agree entirely, but I actually think nearly everyone, regardless of what they're going into, should work in hospitality. You know, it seems basically the amount of parents that thank us for their kids going through and working in the lobby, no matter what career you go into, I think there's a serious lack of personal skills, and like, if you can get on with people, if you can deal with different customers,
it doesn't matter whether it's work in retail or you should always work at some point with the general public.
You work under pressure, you work with people, you work with difficult customers, you work with lovely customers,
it's hard graft.
Like,
and there's an element to that, you know, like we see like 18-year-old, 19-year-olds coming in who, some of their teens are through COVID or whatever, but like, they have no idea of a part-time job. Their first part-time job at 18, 19, and like, I had somebody who's on our basic pay grade, turn around to me when he was asked to clean a storeroom and said, that's beneath my pay grade, is what he told me as an 18-year-old. And I was thinking in my head, I was like, you know, as I said, like our granddad always said, you had to do everything to be able to coach anything. Yeah. And so I took off my jacket and cleaned the storeroom with him. I was like, no, it's not beneath anybody's pay grade in this building. You know, and it's in your in my head, I was like, that's actually probably what you enjoy the most. You're getting a rush out of a busy night and getting better and being able to go from being confused at taking one table's order to managing five tables in your section and feeling in control. Like, there's so much instant validation to that, and it's such instant feedback that I think it's really confidence building for somebody who's young when they grow into it, you know. And that would be a big
but whatever career you end up in, if you have that grounding and that ability to deal with people and
different attractive
pressures, you do better. People you get promotions, you move on, like. And and then for people that want to stay in hospitality, like, Joseph has a great career path in a way, like, everywhere in the world has hotels, everywhere in the world has restaurants. You'll get a job, you can travel, like Joseph been to Dubai, the Caribbean, New York, like every young person's dream to go and work in these places. and then internal promotion in smaller companies, like, if you work hard, you progress quickly in hotels. And there's finance, there's sales, there's
finance,
there's sales, there's ops, there's front desk, there's, you know, there's actually a load of roles. And all the general public hear about is, oh, Jesus, long hours, Jesus, must be never out of the place. Yeah. It's not really, that's not the industry, it's long hours and everything. Yeah. I'm sure there's long hours. And,
there is, better believe it.
Yeah.
Besides the family connection, who have you or do you seek advice from?
Depends on what you're seeking advice on, but, like, I have a great friend group and family group that work in various industries and, you know, can give you a different perspective on things. I'm also very lucky to have a lot of colleagues through the Hotel Federation that there's a great community of people that we can speak plainly and share our problems and figure things out with.
I'd say the same. Like, a great group of friends who, like, even like recently we're doing finance things. I'm talking to some friends in Davie even, like, I have a couple of friends in hospitality and publicans and things like that. And, you know, geez, are you seeing this, or, you know, like, what way are you handling that? And, you know, I was recently talking to a friend of mine who's a publican who's like going to a 4-day work week and for his bartenders, and I'm asking, going,
like, how do you make it work?
How did you do that? How did you cover the hours? What, you know, and are you finding much more applicants? And, you know, and that's really cool. Like, you know, to be able to chat frankly, or we always joke about, like, a late pint in Baggot Street when you're finished service and dinner or whatever. Yeah. You know, go in after, and the two of us would chat about work for 10 minutes and then go join the rest of our friends.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. But,
and this will be, I'm intrigued to the answer to this one now. What do you look for when you go and stay in a hotel yourselves?
Oh, Jesus.
Are you, like, the worst critics?
No. Oh, Mark, not enough.
I think
you're passively critical. Cleanliness is a big one.
Yeah.
Because cleanliness shows attention in a basic sense. And then, like, genuinely, like, personal elements, people remembering your name. I think skill can be forgiven on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
For me, like, intent and people, you know, sort of showing they care.
Yeah.
Like, apart from that, I'm pretty easily blown away, because in a busy restaurant, I'll be sitting there uncomfortable asking them to go to other tables to take other orders. Like, I don't cope well with it. And I more find, like, amazement going, did you see what they did there, or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I know my partner Alana, like, she's...
Are you forever taking notes when you go away to work?
Yeah. we actually set up a shared album for pictures. So, like, put in a picture of a napkin we like or whatever. Yeah. And then it goes into the shared album and we chat about it later. So, like, if there's anything, you know, if I like this microphone, I'll take a snap of it and say, geez, we should have one of these in the business centre, you know.
But yeah, I think it's like, Joseph said it, but attitude, I will forgive everything. You could get my order wrong, you could bring the wrong dish to the wrong table. I don't care. If you smile and you're nice and you fix it, I will forgive everything. Like, that's why it guides my belief in the hotel, of just showing the right attitude. Like, people will forgive mistakes if you care.
Yeah.
But going to hotels, I think probably because we enjoy it so much, I speak for myself anyway, because we enjoy it so much, we always are looking at, oh, look, that's cool. Like, we could do that there. That's really cool. That's a nice glass. Or that's a nice way they serve that. And my wife slags me all the time, because if we go to a restaurant or a hotel. I'm taking photos of all the salt shakers and the glasses and everything. She's like, do you ever do anything, these bloody photos?
Oh, right. You never know, but I might
eat it. Oh, one day.
Well, we'd be having a chat and I'd be like, oh yeah, what are we, the restaurant's like, oh, we went to dinner 6 months ago. I'm like scrolling through the photos.
Well, it's interesting. Your man Christopher Nissetta, do you know what he said, that the most important thing for clients when they talk to customers is, do you know what the most important thing is? The quality and the number of towels in the bedroom. That's the thing. He said, because the feedback from all the customers is there's never enough towels and they're always poor quality. He says Hilton are now just about to roll out brand new towels across the whole of the network. And he said he took the towels home, sampled all the towels, brought them home, gave them to his wife, gave them the whole lot, and that's how they made the decision as to what towels were going to be rolled
That's
the whole
thing,
you know. It's a bit crazy, all right.
Quantity is an interesting one, because it's you know, people used to they'd say a lot about weight of glasses is like a mental trigger for price point. So like, if you imagine, you in your head imagine drinking a top shelf whiskey, you don't imagine drinking a light glass.
That's true, actually.
So like, it's a similar thing, you know. I think one of the main 5-star differentials in their checkbook in America is the distance from either side of the toilet. The space around you makes it feel more palatial. Swear to God, you have to have a certain foot distance from
round either side.
And if you think about any nice hotel room that you've been in, always acres of space.
We'll have to clear some space around the toilets.
Well, I as a slight aside to that one, I haven't read it myself, but somebody did reference to me, there's a book called Unreasonable Hospitality, and it's all about the strangest requests you've gotten in the hotel. So what is the strangest request that could have ever...
the lady that asked you to show her the sea.
Oh, God. I took a phone call. I just happened to walking by the front desk and I noticed that the girls were occupied and the phone was ringing at the back. So I ran in, I picked up the phone and I said, good evening, reception speaking, Joseph. And the lady said, oh, I booked a sea view room and I can't seem to see the sea. And I was going, I'm looking at it. They go down in odd numbers. Yeah. 21 would be the last one, and I believe she's in the middle floor, so the fourth floor, high enough, and at about like 17. So I was like, just like, couldn't have much of a better view. You're right. So anyway, I said, I basically then looked out to see if there was fog. I didn't know. So I basically said, bear with me 1 second, let me have a look and I'll call you back. And I put down the phone, and anyway, she called back about like 30 seconds later, and I hadn't thought up a fathomable answer yet. That was anyway good. And she said, oh, sorry, sincerest apologies. I walked out. I didn't look right.
The big expanse of water.
Huge view over Dublin Bay. And I was like, oh, that's okay, madam. Don't worry about it.
I tell that story to a colleague on a sales trip, and it's in a different hotel. But he said, I suppose it's strange. He said, oh, I can top that. And he said he got called to a room to unlock the safe, you know, and you accidentally locked in the safe. And when he went up and he put in the master key and the code and he opened it up and there's a bowl of chicken wings in the safe. They'd pressed 10 minutes start. I say it in a different sense, but we do like 22,000 room nights a year, probably 50,000 hotel guests. And like, you're going to meet some different people, you know, so it's just, I think there's a book in it.
As I always say, it's Bertie Bassett, it takes all sorts.
It's good.
Right, lads, we have the final tradition on the book. The black book is coming out, right? And
oh, Lord.
Don't know about this one.
Let Mark
go first. It could be a quick answer to this one, right? And I'm actually looking at you, because I'd say that could well be that more likely you're going to answer in the affirmative this one, right? Joseph. But here we go. Have you ever been fired and did you deserve it?
I actually have.
Have you?
Yeah.
Do you want to give us the detail? I'm shocked because I was expecting you to be the one.
No. I walked out.
It wasn't a firing. It was like, I was on a J1 in a restaurant in Montauk, and there was an American manageress, and she was particularly poor manager, and all the Irish staff and all didn't like her, and she was like really rude and took advantage of a lot of people. And it was I was finishing the next day, and I said something cheeky to her, like about chopping bread for service or something. And I gave her a cheeky response. And she's like, "That's it, you're fired." And they were all laughing because she was just making. I was leaving the next. I'm leaving in the morning. Like she's like, but she's just trying to make a point to all the other people.
No, I don't think I was. I walked out of the tea rooms in Killiney. On the premise that one of my friends was accused of stealing or something like this.
I took a matter of point,
I'm going down the road like 50 metres away to get my job back in the castle. But
I got told to come in for my last shift, I suppose.
You got sacked. No,
I never got any paperwork.
Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guests, Joseph and Mark Scott Lennon. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks and see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.